This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. Broadcasting along the Civic Media Radio Network, it's the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday. Good to be with you today, Matt and Patrick. Jam-packed show today. Patrick Cooligan joins us in the 4 o'clock hour from the Minnesota Reformer to talk about some of the headlines there. But joining us right now is Cliff Schechter. If you're not watching his YouTube page, you're just wrong. Cliff, a national and presidential pundit, kind enough to join us today. He wanted to chime in today because one of the stories, and this is something that happens on a regular basis, the latest example is happening here in Minnesota with the Republican nominee for governor, Scott Jensen, who is a nightmare. He apparently is set to speak tonight at a Republican-Jewish coalition event, but should make an awkward situation considering he was caught recently speaking to a group called Mask Off MN, where he basically very much compared having to wear a mask to what the Jews went through in Nazi Germany, which is just, once again, disgusting. Cliff wanted to chime in on this. Cliff, howdy, my friend.
I'll start with the nice stuff. How are you, Matt?
I'm doing very well. You were in New York for, was the Paul O'Neill Day with the Yankees?
I was. We were in for 48 hours. It's sort of weird, you know, because obviously my kids growing up in Cincinnati. Well, of course, Paul O'Neill was a Cincinnati star, too, who helped them win the World Series in 1990. So there is that aspect to it, and he still lives here. But, and so my kids have actually met him before. So there's probably something to that part of it, too. But it is kind of cool for me the way, you know, for me, I grew up a Yankees fan because I grew up in New York, and my dad was from the Bronx, and we had that connection. And that's what my kids have sort of in that way, right? It's you root with your dad. And so we still root for the Reds, too. But, you know, that late 90s team when I was in New York, that was kind of like a defining era in baseball for me. So the fact that they were retiring his number, and, you know, my mom is still in New York, so we take periodic trips to see family anyhow. So why not take it? We just rush in for a quick 48 hours. When I say rush in, I mean like, man, we were everywhere. We barely sat still. You know,
that's 48
in Manhattan. We were there, dude.
No, in 48 hours in Manhattan. It sounds like a lot of times. No, you just getting anywhere is going to take you a while. So that's impressive. Good news for your team's doing great. Our team is falling off into the seventh circle of hell. But hey, great. You know, I'm so happy for you, Cliff. I'm the Twins.
Well, our team was falling off in that circle. We had until like the last couple games. I mean, the Yankees. Impossible to predict. I think we had like the second to worst record in the league since the All-Star break. We just had played so well beforehand because, you know, we had a couple key injuries, Stanton, and we lost Carper, who was like a godsend for us, and a few other people, or Carpenter, I think it's like Carper there. And then we go up against Manoa on Toronto and Scherzer on the Mets, and suddenly, you know, it's almost like it takes the best pitchers to wake us up.
Yeah.
All these guys going up against us with 7 ERAs we couldn't touch. We go up against the guys with 2.5 ERAs, and suddenly we're winning again. I don't know, man.
I'm actually hopeful now, the Brewers. I mean, because I just don't think the Twins are going to do it. And so now I'm banking. I'm putting it because the other team I follow, you know, is the Red Sox, but they're done.
Yes.
And so, you know, the Twins are dying a painful death. I'm putting everything on the Brewers. Hopefully Milwaukee, you know, they just got to get past St. Louis.
Are the Twins still in it? Aren't they still in it, though?
But they can't hit it. They couldn't hit a barn. You might as well just take the bat and put it up at home plate because that's about as much hitting as you're going to get. No human. Just put the bat there and just, okay, we'll call it 3 and we'll go back to the dugouts. You know, that's going to be a thing. So.
It's amazing to me. Well, you know, I mean, Correa was injured, you know, for a bit. That probably didn't help. But I don't know. You guys have some players. I would have thought there would have been some hitting going on there, but
any word,
just reminds you never know.
Any word how long Buxton and Mr. Glass is gone?
I have not checked on that today, no.
All right. Anyway.
Well, that's the other problem, of course, Buxton. Like, I think he might be the most talented player, or certainly one of the 2 or 3 in the entire sport, but he can't stay on the field.
He eats a bonbon and basically breaks his jaw. I mean, it's Mr. Glass. It's Mr. Glass. Oh. Anyway, that aside, let's turn towards Scott Jensen, who is, once again, just the latest Republican who they go on out into these really red districts where they basically love the vilification and they have no problem yelling Hitler, Nazis on anything that they disagree with that the Democrats have done. And here he is, he's out there calling face masks during a pandemic the same, kind of very much implying it's the same path that the Jews had going into Nazi Germany. And you, yesterday, you were livid about this and still are.
I've had enough. I've had enough of these lightweight idiots, these moronic piles of rhinoceros feces opening their big damn yaps and talking about things they don't know anything about. And it just, I mean, you know, I'm used to the stupidity of Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert and these couple of clowns in the House. But it's like it's infected people, and you know, obviously plenty of them in the Senate, and people running for statewide office. I mean, this collection of gubernatorial candidates, Mastriano, right? And what's her name? Tudor Dixon in Michigan. I mean, they're the biggest collection of just complete idiots that I feel like I've ever seen. And your guy, you know, I mean, like, I just that comparison. I mean, I honestly, like, I want to take him a clockwork. I don't want to hurt him. I want to take him a Clockwork Orange style. Maybe this would hurt him a little bit, but it wouldn't be to hurt him. And I want to, like, clothespin his eyes open, and I want to make him sit there and watch Nazi footage of people being forced into gas chambers where they gasp and scream and scratch the walls so hard that they leave marks because they're choking on their own vomit and they're dying, and they're being put to death and deprived of oxygen. And this, I stopped myself for a second because I almost used a word I can't use on your station. This person has a gall to compare that to wearing a mask to common sense, simple, easy things. I mean, I'm sure he's all for making 10-year-olds, you know, completely destroy their bodies if they happen to be raped by a family member or a stranger and give birth, and then have to figure out economically how they're going to take care of a baby at 10. And emotionally, how they're going to take care of a baby and themselves at 10. I'm sure it's all for that. But putting on a mask and getting a vaccine, like, oh, you know, you did for polio and you did for typhus and you did for all these other diseases. Oh, I mean, that's just Nazi Germany. And I've had it. And I just want to get up in these people's faces and honestly tell them to shut the something up that I can't say here. Because I've had it with their stupidity. I've had it with these ignorant morons who think that just in many cases, because of the color of their skin and their little privileged existences, they know anything about anything. And I'll admit, because, you know, the truth is of the matter is obviously, you know, I was born in the 70s. I'm not nearly old enough to know, but I know the stories of certain members of my family that didn't make it out of Nazi Germany. Okay. And, you know, I can't imagine anybody, Republican Jewish coalition being Jewish and Republican right now. I can't fathom that. Much less sitting there listening to this again. I stopped myself. I'm trying really hard here, Matt.
No, and you're doing good. You're doing good. You're
getting
doing good.
Up and speaking at your event. I can't even fathom it.
It was just, it was that crap in, you know, Republican. I'm trying to sound intelligent by bringing in Kristallnacht and talking about the Nazis going after the Jews and then coming on back and saying, you know, well, in a way, I think that's where we're here today. You sense something happening. It's growing little by little. No. It's not. It's just you. It is, once again, you and I have talked about this in the past. When you basically compare your opponent to Nazis, not only for the most part are you grossly over-exaggerating the actions of your political opponent, but the real crime is you're taking the atrocities of the Nazis and lessening them because your natural reaction is just to compare them to everything. Oh, they passed a school levy? Nazis. They're going to raise your taxes? Nazis. They're going to try to save this.
It's a bad-sounding word, right? Like, yeah. That's all they know. So that sounds like an evil word, so we're going to use that, even though a lot of their members of their base openly actually are Nazis. And I'm not being hyperbolic. I'm talking about the people that
admit it. They've had four. They got four Nazis. They got four Nazis.
They put the patches on their arms.
Yeah.
I mean, like this isn't me saying you're a Nazi, and they're saying, no, I'm not. It's you're a Nazi. And they're like, yeah. You know, I mean that whole just cesspool social media site Gab that Doug Mastriano, the one running in Pennsylvania, has associated himself with, the guy who runs that openly admits that he thinks that Jews need to be rounded up. I mean, like, we're not leaving a lot to the imagination here, you know? And, like, I'm sorry, but if we're going to say who's closer to Nazis, it's people who are spying on each other on Facebook and places like that, and turning in young women who at the age of 14 or 10 or whatever don't want to be forced to give birth, don't want their bodies to become, you know, like literally controlled by the state, all right, as well as people who want to be able to love who they want to love. If we're talking about who the Nazis are in this equation, it'd be the ones that don't want to allow people to love each other because they're different, their gender is wrong, or the color of their skin is wrong, or women aren't allowed to have control of their bodies because they're just women and they're quote unquote sluts, and you know they're using it for birth control, which is ludicrous. Or I mean, you know, those would be the ones who resemble the things Nazis said and did.
Mm-hmm. And we should also throw in there, how about in Texas, where they're banning books left and right? In Florida, where they're banning books left and right. That's the book burnings, bannings of books. That's not something that happens here. And once again, it's if you have someone who's claiming to be a Nazi running for office as a Republican, that's calling them a Nazi. Saying you disagree with something on a policy, that's where you basically are taking the horrors and trying so much to associate your outrage with something really, truly outrageous.
Listen, I refer to a bunch of the folks who as Nazis who actually self-identify.
Yes.
I mean, that's where the Republican Party is. Proud Boys, Oath Keepers, some of these groups. I mean, you go to these, you know, at Turning Point USA, the Tea Party group, you know, gathering, there were a bunch of guys out there in Nazi regalia who support the far right. I didn't call them Nazis. They called them Nazis. I'm agreeing with them. They are.
That's exactly it. It's tough. Once again, he is at this event tonight, and apparently it is. I don't know if you can still get in. They were saying there was open admission. It's if you're in the Minneapolis-St. Paul metro area, it's off Highway 100 and Cedar Lake Road. It's back in there. I would love to go watch Scott Jensen tap dance around this issue. I'll tell you what, let's take a break. Cliff Schechter kind enough to join us. And once again, if you're not following him on YouTube, you're wrong. We'll come back with Cliff here in a second. I want to expand a little bit on this because this is indeed going down a little bit of a more dangerous path at this point. You're listening to the Matt McNeil Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Broadcasting live on Devil Radio 92.7 FM in Madison, 1580 AM Columbus on WTTN there, WAUK 540 AM Waukesha 101 FM, The Shaw in Waukesha, Milwaukee, Bull Falls Radio, WXCO 98.9 FM, 1290 AM in Wausau, locally grown radio, WFHR 1320 AM and 97.5 FM in Wisconsin Rapids, Stevens Point, and of course, on the flagship here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, it is the Matt McNeil Show. Cliff Schechter, kind enough to join us here. Cliff, I should remind you, this event tonight also features another person who has used Nazi, you know, and anti-Jewish rhetoric, Kim Crockett, the Secretary of State candidate, who once again at the GOP convention here in Minnesota, when she was the endorsing convention, she aired an anti-Semitic video to the crowd, and the GOP raucously applauded the video. She as well will be there talking to the Republican Jewish Coalition.
I mean, you know, it's so out in the open now that it's sort of hard to kind of, you know, it's not as shocking, right? It still makes me angry, but it's not as shocking. And in those cases, I mean, at this point, if you're part of the Republican Jewish Coalition, right, you know, you're the chicken coalition for foxes. I mean, that's really what you are. So, like, you know, enjoy it. I never understand these folks who think somehow when they walk out of the room, things aren't being said right away. The same thing for you know, gay Republicans, black Republicans. I mean, I'm sorry, these guys have made pretty clear who they think America is. And it ain't you. You know, there's always those hangers-on and the people who are, oh, no, I know they like me, it's all okay. Well, when it comes down to it, guess what? You're going to the same place I'm going to if they take over. So I don't understand anymore. I used to have a whole bunch of, like 10 years ago, I had a whole bunch of Jewish Republican friends. You know what I mean? And we disagreed very strongly on economics and certain things like that. But that was when a Republican Party, for however terrible it was on an openly white nationalist party. Didn't have its members openly say, we're white nationalists. And when they did, they were rebuked or kicked out, or they purposely, you know, made sure that they did not win their primary. I mean, I'm not, again, I'm not rewriting history and turning the Republican Party into some wonderful group of terrific people. Their policies have been awful for about 30 years now, and they've gotten worse every year. And they made it clear who they're for, which is just very, very, very wealthy people, but or religious zealots, obviously. But you know what? At least back then, there was a tolerance and an openness based upon race, religion. Certainly, there is discrimination. But, I mean, now it's in your face. Now it's outright, you don't belong. You are not as good. You are not you are the other. And how they have not gotten that message yet is sort of incredible to me.
You know, I want to put an analysis, a thing I thought about here, and I put this together because there is also this other side of when you invoke the Nazis anytime you want to vilify your opponent, where it goes wrong. And the Republicans are a prime example of this. We'll start at point A, which is the Republicans know Trump is god awful. So what they do is they go to point B, they create this incredible villain on the other side. It's vampire Dracula, and he's killing babies in pizza places and that sort of thing.
Yep.
They do this because then they can say at that point, well, yeah, sure, Trump is not perfect, but at least I'm not voting for a vampire Hitler who's eating babies.
Correct.
But now we're actually,
and normally that vampire Hitler is called George Soros for a very specific reason.
Exactly.
But keep going.
But then we get to point C, which is the other really dangerous point. Because you are constantly vilifying your political opponents with a dim-witted crowd of fools who basically are getting brainwashed into truly thinking they are these evil entities, can we make a connection to that, to where we now have the consistent grab your guns, lock and load, time to maybe shoot some people, try to overthrow the government? I think this is why we're getting to this point with the Republican Party, is because when you've constantly for 20 years vilified people with the worst of history, now you basically are giving dim-witted morons the feeling like they have to start shooting rounds off.
Oh, I mean, I don't think there's no thinking about it. I mean, this is statistically provable, right? I mean, there is an actual study, stochastic terrorism. I mean, when you have enough people out there saying enough all of these kinds of awful things and demonizing people, you can't predict exactly what's going to happen and when it's going to happen, but you statistically can predict something will. It's not like a coincidence that right after Donald Trump sent out that tweet, attacking Mike Pence's weakness, it was 3 minutes later that the crowd broke through and started rushing inside the Capitol. Okay, it's not a coincidence that after Rand Paul sent out his tweet saying that the FBI planted evidence at Mar-a-Lago, and such profiles and courageous Rick Scott and Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio and others said it was a partisan attack by a partisan judge, and it was something that had, you know, that had nothing to do with the law, and Trump was the victim. That the FBI building in Cincinnati here had a guy try to break in and shoot people. That numerous people showed up with guns among that crazy group to the FBI building in Phoenix and threatened them. That some lunatic crashed his car into a barrier in Washington, D.C., right outside the Capitol, started shooting in all directions around there, and then shot himself to death and lit his car on fire. I mean, these are not accidents. These are not coincidences. They're not accidental. These are the reasons I've talked again and again, you know, that we have refused to take a look at the state of our world right now and how communications have changed, social media, internet, whatever, and come up with sort of an updated First Amendment understanding of what people should and what is too dangerous for people to say and not say. I mean, we determined sharing pornographic materials about children was not part of the First Amendment because it was too dangerous. We made that determination. We made a determination about shouting fire in a crowded theater, inciting riot, libel, slander. And we just, at least at this moment, have not seemed to be willing to tackle this. That people that purposely go online on cable TV and tell something that is, you know, it's not people making a mistake. Rand Paul knew he was flat out lying. And he went on TV and said that. And people could have died because of it. Some did, the ones who actually listened to him and were propagandized and have been given the easiest of access to military weaponry. They did die, two of them. Yeah. You know, but luckily no innocent people died in those, but they will. Just like they did in a Walmart in El Paso after they said this caravan was coming across the border. just after, they did Jews worshiping at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh did, after they claimed it was George Soros who was sponsoring that migrant caravan. You know, just after their white replacement theory, they were starting to share that, you know, that whites were going down as a part of the population, and we need to make sure that stops. And some crazy person drives up to a market in the Buffalo area that happens to be a black market, and, you know, black as in African Americans shopping there, and walks in and starts shooting everybody he can see. These are not coincidences. They are predictable. Mm-hmm. They're predictable responses to irresponsible idiots using the kind of language that they purposely know will incite people to kill people.
Indeed. Absolutely. And at the end of the day, once again, no. The Nazis were the Nazis. Hitler was Hitler. Your disagreement, I don't care which political party you are, that's not a fair comparison. Cliff Schechter, once again, the YouTube page. Follow it. I'll link to it a little bit later on. Cliff, as always, my show is better when you are on it. Thank you, my friend.
You're a good man. Thanks for having me, buddy. Take care.
You are a fantastic man. Thank you very much for the time. Let's take a break. Come on back. More of the Matt McNeil Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's the Matt McNeil Show on your Tuesday. Good to be with you. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll spotlight that Cliff interview. And Schechter is exactly right. Here is the part about Republicans today I don't understand. On one side, you claim to be the saviors of the Jewish faith. And you for lack of a better way to say it, Republicans romanticize the struggle of the Jews through Nazi Germany to validate their own, personal grievances. But yet your party is also a cesspool of anti-Semitic jackasses. There are an insane amount of anti-Semitic fools there. And and that's the part which is, I will say this, and when you get to this, and I tell you the truth, I have been on this show. You can go listen to the tapes. Over the years, I have done this radio show. I have been very critical of even Democrats who bring up whenever there's someone they disagree with saying Nazi, because that's not right, because the Nazis were the Nazis. They were truly an evil organization that, their entire existence was to force their will onto other people. And the insanity of trying to suggest, as these people were rounding up the Jews, shipping them to work camps, shipping them to execution camps, ripping out any teeth with gold fillings to melt that down before they executed these people, shaving their hair and using that for other things. My God, do not try to act as if, yes, school board decision that my child should wear a mask as levels of COVID in the area are really high. That's just like Nazi Germany. No. All you do is show your freaking ignorance towards history. You don't know a damn thing about it. Yet you guys fantasize about trying to, elevate your grievances to the level of rounding up the Jews and executing them, dear Lord, while at the same time you have so many anti-Semitic people in your party. And I don't see, there's a lot of people out there, Matt, that's not fair. I'm not an anti-Semitic person. I'm a Republican, but I'm not an anti-Semitic person. First thing I'll say to you is, how many times have you demanded that anti-Semitic people in your party leave? Well, I don't want to cause any ripples and streams. I mean, come on, Matt. I mean, some people are entitled to their opinion. I don't think we should condemn them. No. If there was someone in the DFL who was anti-Semitic, I would want them gone. I would want them gone. If they were against black people or the Native Americans or against Muslims or against Latinos or Mexicans or anyone. No. This is really simple. But yet you guys like to act as if, I mean, this is kind of like going back to, in a way, it's the inability of Republicans to realize what they have tolerated for so long. Because as much as you as a Republican might not be anti-Semitic, might actually be aghast by this, the fact that you aren't demanding these people are removed from your political party, or at least stripped of the ability to hold office within your party, that's your problem. You need to be vocal. You need to say things. You need to say enough's enough. The reality is I think you tolerate, you might not be anti-Semitic, but you tolerate anti-Semitism in your party. And you can sit there all day long and say, well, I'm not. I don't really do that. Well, have you condemned them? Have you demanded that they get kicked out? Well, no. Well, then you tolerate it within your own party. You're anti-Semitic curious, at the very least. At the very least. And here is the real problem for Scott Jensen, is that when Scott Jensen goes on out after tonight, I don't know what he's going to do. It does sound like, once again, that event is open to the public. I mean, you just had to get in put in reservation. I don't know if you still can. I will say this. Where this is at, the only road into this place is Cedar Lake Road, east of Highway 100. So if you wanted to at least be out there to have a sign, which, you know, Jensen would have to see as you drive by, there is an opportunity for you to let your, you know, peacefully protest on a sidewalk in a public area, but they have to drive back down Cedar Lake Road east on the east side of Highway 100 to get back onto 100. So you can be out there if there's a sidewalk with a sign saying, you know, letting know your personal feelings. If you can't get into Tap Dance Fest 2022 over at what's going to be going on there. But he's going to go and do this. He's going to go out there tonight, and he's going to be out there insisting that, oh, this is the liberal media misconstrued this. I've always been a big supporter of the Jewish faith. I would never demean what happened there. But the people out in rural America, they're the ones that want to hear this. At the same time as being, you know, like I said, a shocking amount of anti-Semites within the rural Republican Party, they themselves like to fantasize that their inconveniences, their slight inconveniences, are on par with the greatest injustice of the last 100 years, if not of the last millennia, on this planet. And Jensen's got to go back out there. And they don't want to hear this namby-pamby, tell it like it is. Remember when you said it was just like the Nazis? Tell us more about that. My gut feeling is that there's going to be an incredible effort to prevent the people from bringing cameras or anything like that into any of the events that are going to be in outstate Minnesota, because they don't want to have that kind of problem having to explain these things as it goes on out there. I don't think that they want to, but you know, now it's going to, you know, my gut feeling is if he shows up tonight, because I still think that there's a decent chance he might not show up tonight. If he feels as if this is going to just go wrong, if there's going to be media there, if, you know, and I don't know, it didn't say on the event, I don't think it said if media was allowed. It just said you could, you know, call for reservations. So there might even be media there. My guess would be is tonight they might actually shut that down and say, okay, media has to leave. This isn't a closed event, but we'll see. No, trust me, Cliff Schechter is not the only one angry. I'm angry about this. I know a lot of people, a lot of Jewish people, a lot of non-Jewish people who are somewhat bothered by the idea that this guy can't just stop trying to over-accentuate his grievances by grabbing onto the Nazis and screaming, Hitler! because that's who Scott Jensen really is. He got nothing else. It's the sign that he has nothing else to campaign on. 952-946-6205. Some big primaries today. It is Tuesday. We are in primary season. You got Florida, New York, and Oklahoma on tap for tonight. Oklahoma, all eyes will be on the runoff for the Senate Republican race to secede. Inhofe, who's a massive jackass. The favorite is Representative Mark Wayne Mullen, a five-time member of the House and vocal. And by the way, Mark Wayne is apparently one word. A five-time member of the House and vocal critic of President Joe Biden. Mullen won the June primary, taking almost 40% of the Senate of the crowded 13-candidate field. T.W. Shannon, a former House Speaker of the Oklahoma Legislature and the state's most prominent African-American Republican, came in second with a bit more than 17% of the primary vote. Both Mullen and Shannon are enrolled members of Native American tribes, the Cherokee and Chickasaw Nations, respectively. Mullen has criticized Biden on the Kiev withdrawal from Afghanistan, search for the White House documents, former Trump. I'll get to that in a second. Mullen was among several House members who traveled to Afghanistan region 2021 to try to help Americans and Afghan allies get out of the government. He came under political fire for the trip and denied he was showboating. He was showboating. In New York, how about Carl Paladino? This guy's trying to come back. The Donald Trump of Western New York is attempting a comeback and has a real shot at winning a seat in Congress. Wow. The Buffalo real estate developer who recently called for Attorney General Merrick Garland to be executed. No, not arrested. Executed. Is running against his one-time ally, State Republican Chair Nick Langworthy, in New York's conservative 23rd Congressional District. The seat opened up when Chris Jacobs renounced his retirement after facing intense backlash with his party for supporting a ban on assault weapons. Paladino has more money and more name recognition, but also considerably more baggage as well. He's frequently been in the national spotlight for such comments as praising Adolf Hitler and claiming that children were being brainwashed into accepting gay people. In 2010, he ran a disastrous campaign for governor in which he received attention for forwarding pornographic emails to friends who were then leaked to the media. And in late 2016, he called First Lady Michelle Obama a man who should live with gorillas and said he hoped Barack Obama died from having sex with a cow. Paladino was Trump's New York co-chair of the 2016 presidential campaign. And that guy is... You want to know where the Republican Party is today? 20 years ago, that guy would not have even made it to a primary. He would have been, the party themselves would have pulled him off. Now he's quite literally their great white hope. A last minute nonpartisan redistricting ordered by a judge upended New York's Democrats' latest plans. A new map emerged. Top Democrats played the game of musical chairs to optimize their chances. Redistricting has pitted Jerry Nadler against Representative Carolyn Maloney in the Upper West Side, both of whom are fighting for control of New York's new 12th congressional district. The Nadler, who has the endorsement of Chuck Schumer, is slightly to Maloney's left on policy. The contrast, New York 10th district, an entirely new seat in Lower Manhattan, has Central Brooklyn, has been most open-ended and potentially most consequential for the direction of the Democratic Party. 12 candidates remain in the race to represent one of the most solidly Democratic seats in the country. At least five contenders have mounted serious bids as well there, so that's going to be more on that. Val Demings, the Orlando area Democrat, is vacating her House seat to run against Marco Rubio. That has prompted a race to secede her in Florida's solidly Democratic 10th congressional district. The two top contenders are Democratic nomination are Maxwell Frost, an anti-gun violence advocate, and Senator Randolph Bracey, the more moderate of the two candidates, picked up the endorsement of the Democratic majority of Israel early in the cycle that pro-Israel groups would spend big on his behalf. Frost has built an unlikely coalition support that spans the ideological spectrum and discouraging outside groups from jumping into heavily on Bracey's behalf. Frost is backed by political action committees across the board. So that will be an interesting one. And although most elections due to take place in the Empire State are Tuesday or primaries, the New York's 12th congressional district in the Hudson Valley region, voters are set to cast ballots in a special general election. Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro, a Republican, is running against Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan, a Democrat, for the chance to succeed Democrat Antonio Delgado for the remaining 4 months of the year. Delgado's seat opened up when New York Governor Kathy Hochul picked him to serve as lieutenant governor in May. On its face, the stakes of the race are limited. Whoever wins will only serve in the seat's pre-redistricting boundaries for a brief period. Molinaro is planning to run again in the new 19th district come November. Ryan is running in the new 18th district, which has been he's been redistricted into. So it's just a four-month kind of loner seat at that point. Needless to say, I mean, obviously, Rick Smith, I imagine, will have a lot coming up on this tonight. He'll be covering this and paying attention to these elections that are going on out there. You know, as far as the primaries go, it's kind of, once again, it's just seeing who you're going to, who's facing off against who. I mean, I guess, you know, in the more, the far right, like in the Texas Senate race, or it's going to, Oklahoma Senate race, and in the New York House races, those are, you know, kind of slam dunks. That's the person that's going to win it. But at the same time, it is at least easy, interesting to see what's going to happen. I am going to be shocked. Palladino, if he wins, Carl Palladino wins in New York. That just tells you where the Republican Party is at. And once again, I've said this, they would vote for Satan himself as long as they felt like it would own the libs. As long as they could be 5 feet up higher on the Titanic as it sinks. That's their mentality. It's the Matt McNeil Show. It's the Matt McNeil Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good to be with you. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. I love this this quote from Junior, Trump Jr. He suggested on Monday that the United States would be safer if his father, former President Trump, had stashed the nuclear codes at Mar-a-Lago Golf Resort in Palm Beach, Florida. Donald Trump has the nuclear codes in the linen closet at Mar-a-Lago, Junior hollered. By the way, for the record, if I say Donald Trump actually still had the nuclear codes, it could be probably be good. Our enemies might actually like that. No, I got news for you. First of all, can I just say this? I am taking this very similar to Lee when Mar-a-Lago was raided, and what was it, 8 hours after the raid, Trump's lawyers were already saying, anything found here was clearly planted by the FBI. That's your sign that they found a lot of stuff and they knew that they were in trouble. They're already making excuses for the stuff that they found. I actually think Trump Jr. knows the nuclear codes were there. And once again, I think that that's something that Trump would have tried personally. I think Trump would have easily tried to sell that to the highest bidder on the market to get him a few million dollars if he started running low on cash. And I think that that was the entire point of this. This was a cash, you know, grab operation. That if things got tough and he needed money, that he could take the classified documents, sell them to the highest bidder, and then walk away with, you know, a few million dollars worth of cash, a few hundred million dollars worth of cash. It's not going well for him. Former President Trump had more than 300 classified documents at his Florida estate, Mar-a-Lago, that have since been recovered by the federal government. The figures represent three batches of documents that federal officials have recovered in recent months, and growing concern Trump had absconded with the files after he left the White House. About 150 documents marked classified were handed over to the National Archives in January. A large number of that prompted concern from officials there that Trump may have additional sensitive material in the bowels of his resort. Well, that's I'll just leave that one alone. I'll leave that one alone. Trump reportedly went through those boxes himself late last year before they were turned over. So Trump went through the boxes, knew there was classified documents there, and once again, at no point followed the process to declassify them, not once. Officials at the Justice Department went to Florida Estate in June with a subpoena for any additional classified material, but reviews of security footage and information from interviews with Trump's aides led them to believe there were even more documents that hadn't been turned over. The Times added that former White House officials were tasked with trying to return the documents to the federal government, but Trump resisted, calling the boxes mine, mine. Like a five-year-old, isn't he? He's like a five-year-old. God. And that's so what I think happened was he knew he was in trouble. So he went through the boxes himself. He's admitted this. pulled out what he considered to be the juiciest material the Saudis or the Russians would pay top dollar for, and put them aside and stored them in the broom closet. God. The FBI, armed with a search warrant, went to Mar-a-Lago August 8th, recovered about 20 boxes, including 11 sets of classified material. Federal judge unsealed the warrant shortly after, which shows Trump was under investigation for possible violations of the Espionage Act. The Times, and by the way, I still am waiting for them to say, yeah, well, there's been these very strange and unexplained communications between Trump and certain leaders of a certain countries, because I guarantee you, the people are listening in to what he's saying at this point. The Times, the first report on the sensitive material found during the searches, added it's unclear what type of classified information officials found, but the paper, citing a person briefed on the investigation, said they included material from the CIA, the National Security Agency, and the FBI on topics related to national security. It's unclear if Trump could face any charges related to the documents. The President's Record Act requires all official government materials be turned over to the National Archives at the end of the presidential term. The archives knew, in part, that was missing documents and widely reported the media, including Trump's love letters with North Korean Kim Jong-un. The Times report comes amid a firestorm of FBI agents searched his place. Trump has castigated those involved in carrying out the search, declaring the FBI's action as politicization of the Justice Department and has never happened in the former president. His aides quickly moved to say he had a standing order to automatically declassify documents that left the Oval Office for his residence, although there is no evidence so far to back up that claim. And once again, you have to go through a process. You can declassify documents. Well, you can't. To declassify certain things requires, especially anything to do with national security, generally has to go through the Department of Defense, has to go through Congress, and then they can be declassified. So there are certain things which are top secret, the top level, which you can't just, a president can't grab his wand and, you know, furioso, and there it is. I don't know. I don't know what the Harry Potter, you know, spell is for declassifying information. I'm not sure exactly what that is. Stupidio. That's for Trump, I think. That would be fine for me there. The DOJ's investigation and the documents is ongoing. The fact that he is already acknowledging now, and once again, initially, after the raid, they found nothing here. Then it became, very quickly, they planted everything. Now his own lawyers are admitting, oh, yeah, there is tons of stuff there. Yeah, that he went through it all. You know, he was sorting the boxes like a kid with comic books, kind of making sure what was in there. God, it's disturbing. And then, of course, I do love the pageantry with the search warrant, where the security footage. Trump initially was like, release the search warrant, show them what they were looking for. We're going to release all the security footage. And then as people have said, okay, fine, release the security footage, he's slowly tried to walk that back. I couldn't find the DVD, and it's on a VHS tape, and we don't have a VCR. We really can't share it. So now, and basically his lawyers are screaming at him, do not share this information. And my gut feeling would be is it would completely annihilate the idea that this was in a secure location. It's like, just like under the table at the buffet. Hey, here's another box of documents. Oh, yeah. But it's also, as he's demanded now, after asking for the search warrant to be completely unsealed, he is now demanding that nothing from the search warrant get revealed, that nothing get said, because he knows he's caught. I would like to say, if they do have evidence of him actually conspiring to sell this stuff to the highest bidder overseas, I know it will be hard. I know it, you'll be screamed at. I know you're going to have, you know, far right guy losing a vein in his neck. I get it. You gotta prosecute him. You cannot have people undermining the safety and security of the United States of America for profit. And you got to hold him accountable. You've just got to. Wisconsin folks, guess what? Devil Radio, that's coming up for you next. Minneapolis, St. Paul, hour two, that's coming your way now. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show, hour number two. Matt, Patrick, and Brett, kind enough to sit in the studio with us here. Hi, Brett.
Hello, hello.
How are you today?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm excited about the state fair. I'm going over on Saturday. I'm going to be heavier when I come home. I wonder if they do still do the bucket of Pronto Pups. Did you know they come in bucket? Were you here when you weren't here? Were you when we were out broadcasting at the state fair?
I was not. No,
we were out the old AM 950 dome, and it was a dome home that was out there. And the Pronto Pup stand, we were informed there is indeed a bucket of Pronto Pups you can buy. And I'm like, okay, give me. And so we had a bucket. And they have it. It's a specially made bucket. It's not like an old ice cream bucket. They're like, hey, here's some old Tupperware. I'll piece this together. No, they have a special. That was just my entire show right there.
Chewing as you're on the air, yeah.
Burrell was on with me, I think, that day. Oh, maybe it was Audra and Kate and Audra too. Oh God, that was disturbing. Let's just call it what it was. It was disturbing. But I am looking forward to it. What's your favorite thing to eat out there?
I always like the Sweet Martha cookies. You can't go wrong with those. Pronto Pups are good.
Do you do the 4-pound bucket of cookies and just have the regret? Or I have a lot of friends. I have some friends that say they love having them the next day, but I also have a lot of friends who say it becomes one big ball.
Yeah, you got to seal them up if you're going to – you're not going to eat them all at once. You got to seal them up and, then they won't get all dirty – or not dirty, but, tough to eat, yeah.
Dragging your bucket of cookies home.
Just a streak of chocolate across the wall.
That's at Mar-a-Lago. For me, the best thing I have out there, there is a gyro stand right across from the carousel, right next to Fox 9 is out there. The carousel's there. It's not Dino's. It's the other one. So I was stationed in Nuremberg in Germany. There was a Greek family that owned the stand right off the post. Oh my. Oh my. And that place gets about as close as they get. And I actually take like three home with me. You can get them to go. They're my savior. I'm looking forward to that. Are you heading out this year to the fair?
I'll be out there at least once. I might be streaming an event out there, still kind of up in the air. But even if I don't, I'll still go out there one day.
A sporting event?
No, FFA. They do their exhibit.
Future Farmers of America.
Yeah, I haven't done it since 2019, obviously, with COVID. So hopefully they'll be able to get me back out there for this year.
My thesis paper when I was in college was the importance of agricultural radio. FFA is a fantastic organization. 4-H is a fantastic organization. Mm-hmm. They put out a lot of great kids, and they do a lot of great programs out there. I'm looking forward to that. Dury, of course, the band I'm in love with, they're going to be performing for free, I think, Thursday and Friday out there.
Oh, for free. That's a good deal.
Yeah, you can't go wrong there. So that's the one band I'm trying to find a window to get out there. I'm trying. I don't know if I'm going to be able
to. You got to flash those radio credentials. I'm here to cover you on behalf of the media.
No, it's not so much that. It's I got things I got to cover.
Oh, okay.
My wife will get really mad at me. Maybe I'll see if Adam Dury wants to just go with me to the fair. we'll hike around. It's our day at the fair. I'll convince him that the Euros are good. I do have a bit of a shocking story here, but we now have more information about what happened. You did hear about what happened just down the street here from us at Eden Prairie Center, right?
I had no idea until I got this text from my mom saying, you're not at work right now, are you? You might have some trouble getting out of there. I was looking, what the heck's going on? Yeah, then I saw what was happening at Shields. That sounded like a pretty scary situation.
I had some questions on what happened, but this is really a 19-year-old man. He asked a Shields store employee to see a semi-automatic handgun in the gun department. When the employee handed the unloaded weapon to the man grabbed it, fled across the store towards the archery area while loading the handgun, and then fired a single shot. The police believe the man brought his own ammunition into the store. They were expecting to reopen today. It's very scary in the sense that, you know, he, you know, I believe, you know, he, that's, that was my thought. Was, okay, was the gun loaded or did they show him ammunition? Because I didn't think that it's legal to do that.
No, I wouldn't think. Yeah, that makes sense if he brought his own ammo, but that would be terrifying if you're an employee or someone else. You give the guy a gun and he just runs away and loads it. I mean, you don't know what he's up to with that thing.
Yeah, and he did fatally shoot himself there. It's obviously... Yeah, it's just the latest. It's just the latest in the guns thing, and you know, it's kind of one of those things where you know, if you know, there is a group of people in this state who all they want to talk about is whenever a black person's involved with guns, and the reality is that these guns are everywhere, and they're just not safe. They're not. And I don't know what you can do about something like this. I mean, this is obviously someone has very clear intent that they wanted to sadly end their life. But hey, you want to see a gun? Yeah, here's a weapon of death. Here, you know, here you go. Take a look at it. And I guess at no point did anyone ever say, you know, do you have any ammunition on there? I don't know. My guess is going to be if you go to an Apple store and they have the iPhones there, they're all corded. Right? Mm-hmm. You can't run away with them. My gut feeling is going to be is that maybe that's the next step is maybe we just need to, if you're in a store, that these have to be, you know, they can be, pick them up, they can hold them, but they can't run with them. They basically are cabled to the table or something like that they can't move them.
Yeah, that would probably be a good idea to prevent something like that from happening again, because first time I've heard of that where someone's brought their own ammo and then used the gun that they typically model. I mean... plausible to do, so I think you got to take care of that now.
I think I remember a story, this was a long time ago, I'm guessing like early 90s, that happened. The guy, you know, basically said, can I see the gun, pulls out a box of ammunition, and he ended up killing the store owner and himself, if I remember correctly. And then people were like, you know, people are like, okay, how do you prevent this? I think the only way you can is that, you know, basically is you got to, you know, I don't know if you can allow people, and it has to be a very much more secure situation. And I sure as heck don't think the Eden Prairie Mall is the secure facility that you think it is, that this is a good thing to have in there. Should you even have guns at the Eden Prairie Mall? Legitimately, that's a legit question. Should you even have guns? Do we have gun stores? You can't kick a soccer ball in the United States without a freaking gun store. You have guns everywhere. Do we really need to, at the mall, have a gun? Because what if this person loaded in a full banana clip into that semi-automatic weapon and ran into the mall?
Yeah, that's the terrifying part to think of. I mean, you don't know what he's up to when he runs off with that thing. I mean, thankfully, he didn't hurt anybody else because that could have been an ugly situation. I think your idea that you need to tighten up the security if people are going to look at these guns and... you know, model to make sure they work. You got to make sure there's no ammo or they can't run off with the thing.
As I've just talked about it, I just realized, you know, you can't leave the guns in there. You can't have the guns in the mall. You can't have a gun store. You don't have liquor stores in the mall. Why? Because you don't want people falling over drunk in the mall, right?
Oh, I could see that being a thing like in 10 years, mall traffic keeps going down. I mean, they've done that in grocery stores sometimes where there's like a bar within the grocery store.
I don't even.
Yeah, know. No. You've given them ideas now.
Patrick Cooligan, it is a Tuesday. His excellent. He was the one that broke the story about Jensen in this tape that started emerging where he was comparing his minor inconvenience of having to wear a mask during a pandemic. And reminder, he's a doctor. The minor inconvenience of wearing a mask during a pandemic was on par with the path to what Hitler did to the Jews. Unbelievable. He did a very good job with that article.
Yeah, we talked about that with him a little bit and how that story break. And, you know, we kind of joke like it's our weekly, what did Scott Jensen and Matt Burke say controversial this weekend? Well, now we have this. And, yeah, it's just ugly that he's saying these things because he strikes me as one of those guys that probably knows better but is saying that anyways because he's just got to play to that base. Unlike, yes, you know, Eric Mortensen or a Marjorie Taylor Greene who wholeheartedly believe that kind of crap.
I don't know. I mean, at one point, remember, this is the guy that brought up the diabetes, you know, the insulin bill. And so I thought he spent a year out in Looneyville to get that nomination. I don't know if he does. I think he might even believe that stuff nowadays. It'll be interesting to watch him tap dance tonight. Oh, that'll
Yeah.
There will be a tap dance fest going on over at the Republican Jewish Coalition as he has to speak to them about his use you know, what the Jews went through in Nazi Germany to try to overemphasize his displeasure with minor inconveniences, for goodness sakes.
A little surprised that thing is still going on.
I am too, if you want to know
the truth. That
postponed. And Kim Crockett! And Kim Crockett's going to be there. The anti-Semitic video woman from the GOP convention. Anyway, what else are you talking with Patrick?
Then besides that, we're talking about, so the Reformer has been printing for the past, this is the second time they've done it. They've been printing this excerpt of this book that talks about how you can reform policing by, well, basically just having them deal with mental health issues, whether it's through mindfulness training or meditation. And there is some data to show that this really does work. So we talk about this in this excerpt of this book that's in the Minnesota Reformer. So that's what we got on the docket.
It's Patrick Cooligan from the Minnesota Reformer joining Brett right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon. And today we're speaking with Patrick Cooligan. He is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Make sure you go to minnesotareformer.com for the latest in Minnesota news and politics. As today we'll be primarily focusing on two topics. One has to do with whether mindfulness can help cops become, well, better police officers, and the other has to do with Scott Jensen making, yet again, more controversial statements. Patrick, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. So let's start off talking about mindfulness and policing, because the title of the article in the Reformer today is, Can Mindfulness Help Cops Be Better, More Humane Cops? Only if they'll let it. And this piece is actually an excerpt from a book titled The End of Bias, The Science of Practice of Overcoming Unconscious Bias by a Minnesota writer named Jessica Nordell, who examines how we can eradicate unintentional bias. Now, I want to start off with a pretty shocking stat that is in the excerpt of the book, and it shows that a 2020 study of a large urban police department found that more than one quarter of officers screened positive for depression, PTSD, suicidal ideation, or other severe mental distress. And in 2019 in the U.S., more died by suicide than on the job. Again, that's just an unreal stat that in 2019, more officers died by suicide than on the job. So clearly, this is a problem that needs to be addressed just looking at those absolutely stunning stats.
Right, and there's an effect of this, what amounts to untreated mental illness, that so many first responders, but especially police officers, are experiencing. It's not just the harm being done to the officers themselves, but just the public that the police officers are dealing with, because when your mind is in that state of anxiety, depression, and PTSD, you're sort of always on guard, and we're already throwing them into these very difficult situations. Their reaction is bound to be unbalanced, let's say, and more likely, they're more likely to take mental shortcuts like stereotyping, and they're more likely to respond to fear. And they're more likely to engage in aggressive, what they view as self-defense, but what the public might view as just outwardly hostile behavior and aggression toward the public that they are supposed to be serving and protecting. And so Jessica, who's really an accomplished science writer, does a great job, I think, of unpacking the effect of this kind of stress on the brain, especially when it's repeated. It's just so chronic for so many officers, and they're getting thrown into situations where it's sort of like the most dangerous situation for someone whose brain is already fried by stress, and so it's a pretty toxic cocktail, the writer Jessica Nordell describes here.
Absolutely. And she brings up as well, looking at some more stats, how officers for each additional year on the job, they're 16% more likely to use force. She also found that clocking extra duty hours increased officers' chances of exhibiting serious performance issues, like using excessive force or unnecessarily pursuing individuals or discharging their firearms without reason. And logically, this would line up. The longer you're on the job, the more you're putting in extra hours, you're increasing stress. And I think in really, not just in the field of policing, really any sort of job, the more you're going to increase the stress, the greater the chance you're going to have of making mistakes. So I think she does a good job laying that out as well.
And let me break in for a second. I mean, first of all, I think we all know this is true, that when we're tired, we're more likely to make mistakes and to be overly aggressive and impulsive. And also let me note that, as we've reported in the Reformer, in order to make up for the huge exodus of officers out of the Minneapolis Police Department, they've been allowing massive amounts of overtime. And so, you know, when you work this many hours, we're talking as much as, 20, 30 hours a week in overtime. So much that they had to set up rules to make sure people were getting 8 hours of rest in a 24-hour period. In any case, they're still getting all this overtime. It's just far more likely that those officers are going to engage in aggressive behavior and or make mistakes.
So one of the ways that could potentially mitigate some of the effects of, well, being fatigued or being under stress or other issues is using mindfulness and meditation. And she talks a little bit about this with an officer in Hillsboro, Oregon, named Richard Gorlin. And Richard talks about how, well, as a cop, he was seeing some of these performance issues and he was wondering what he could do to help mitigate some of these. And he turned to the idea of using meditation and mindfulness. And normally, you would think with a police officer, well, that doesn't make sense, because normally you're more about situational awareness and possible threats around you. But he actually became very much a believer into using these types of methods in terms of making policing better.
Right. These kinds of practices are, it's not some newfangled thing. They may be sort of newly trendy in the United States or the Western world, but these there's thousands of years of history to support these kinds of practices that help emotional control and regulation and awareness. And, you know, I think anybody, I mean, I have a 5-year-old son, so I'm very aware of how easy it is to just lose control of your emotions. And these practices have certainly shown to be effective all around the world. And then he found them to be effective for himself. It just made him much more agile in these dangerous situations that police officers face. And so he wanted to bring these practices to other police officers.
Now, the trick is, of course, convincing other police officers to embrace these types of methods. And I know Jessica had a chance to actually sit in on one of these trainings a while back. And I kind of like what she wrote, how a number of these police officers didn't really appear to be open to it, as one guy showed up wearing a shirt that said throat punch. Another guy was in a T-shirt showing a Grim Reaper handing a little boy a skateboard. And there was certainly some skepticism at this training, but there also were officers who were very much open to the idea of using mindfulness and meditation. So that certainly does seem to be a challenge, though, is convincing more police officers to come on board with this idea of using these alternative methods to deal with stressful situations.
Yeah, in our the excerpt that we ran, we ended on a fairly dark, grim note, and Jessica was a little apprehensive. The book itself, she finds to be somewhat optimistic about what we can do about this unconscious bias that is felt in so many realms of life, but especially important in public safety. But yeah, that's the issue: is how do we persuade these guys who are, very often they see themselves in these kind of masculine terms, and they see these methods as somehow not living up to the police ideal of masculinity and so forth. And so they're very skeptical when in fact these methods can actually help them become better police officers and not softer, in any way, but just more mentally agile and help them ameliorate and mitigate all that stress that is affecting their performance and certainly their mental and physical health.
Yeah, yeah, it's easy to sit there and think, well, this is all just hooey BS stuff, but I don't know, maybe if they rebrand it and call it like warrior training or something like that, it could have some sort of effect. Well, I guess warrior training is already a thing, so we can't use that one. But it at least was optimistic that a few cops found that training useful, but certainly there's still a long way to go in terms of getting more departments to embrace this type of training. Are any departments in Minnesota, I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot with this, but have any departments in Minnesota, not just in Minneapolis, embraced this type of training or these alternative methods to dealing with stress?
I actually received a note this morning from a city councilwoman who told me that she knew that officer out in Oregon, and she's been in touch with him, and has been to that retreat and is trying to bring some of that here. So I'm unclear on, you know, if departments here have used it, but certainly there's some interest, at least on the political side.
Well, you can read the excerpt of that book in the Minnesota Reformer over at minnesotareformer.com. Again, minnesotareformer.com. Interesting stuff there, so I encourage you to go and check that out. Well, the other topic I wanted to speak with you about today, Patrick, again, we are joined by Patrick Koulikan, editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer, has to do with yet more controversial comments from Republican nominee for governor Scott Jensen. Seems like a weekly occurrence. Just about we get controversial comments from either Jensen or his running mate, Burke, but Jensen recently made some controversial comments when he was speaking to a group called Mask Off MN. So with these comments, I won't go into these word for word, but basically he compared the idea of having COVID regulations to increasing Nazism, similar to what we saw happen in Germany in the 1930s.
Right, and I do just want to correct you. These aren't recent comments. He made them in the spring.
Gotcha.
But the reason they're certainly relevant to us now is because this evening he's supposed to speak at the Republican Jewish Coalition event. And so we found that an opportune time to report on these comments he made, in which he seemed to compare the rather modest public health mandates around masks and vaccines that were instituted to try to prevent the spread of the COVID-19. He compared them to I guess he was trying to say that this was a creeping tyranny, creeping Nazism. It's a comparison that other Republicans have made. It was more a flavor of the month during the pandemic, but it's clearly inappropriate. It's nothing like Nazi Germany, and he was called out by Jewish groups for making that comparison. And so I think that it's certainly, I'd like to know what the Republican Jewish Coalition thinks of it. And maybe he'll be asked about it at the event this evening.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go next, trying to get the reaction from them, but sounds like they still have not commented on this on these comments at all from Scott Jensen, and it sounds like the Jensen campaign themselves also haven't commented on some of these things that were said by Scott Jensen. I don't know, at least you and I were talking a little bit about this before the interview started. I mean, for some people who are on the far right side of the aisle, whether it's at least at the national level like a Marjorie Taylor Greene or a Lauren Boebert, or even at the local level like an Eric Mortensen, to me those guys strike me as being very true believers in what they're saying. But Scott Jensen wasn't always known as being this far right politician, so this is just my own personal opinion. I don't know, I think he knows exactly what he was saying, but hey, you know, if it fires up the base, it fires up the base.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a column last week in which I talked about his stance on the 2020 election and the very simple question, who won the 2020 election? And his answer was, I have no way of knowing. You know, it's a clever response because he's not putting himself squarely in the camp of that Trump was that the election was stolen from him. But he's also not saying it wasn't stolen from him either. So it's a sort of clever, but it really just kind of shows his kind of cynicism. And my point was that the problem with Trumpism and the authoritarianism that it unleashed is that the horse has kind of left the barn, and there's a map that's been drawn for how anyone who really wants power, how they can get there. And to me, that's it seems to be the route that Jensen is taking. I mean, as you point out, he was not some kind of red meat base Republican when he was in the legislature. He was thought to be pretty open-minded. He would go across the aisle on issues like gun control, marijuana, on a public insurance option. And now suddenly, in order to get the Republican nomination for governor, he had to become something else. I mean, I think some of the vaccine and COVID skepticism, I mean, that might be genuine. I assume it is, because he's been pretty consistent on that stuff from the get-go, no matter how wrong-headed you think he is. It just really seems unlikely that he belongs in that red hat Trumpist camp. But this is the world we live in now, and people who want to win Republican votes are going to have to pledge allegiance to it.
Yeah, going back to what you were saying as to whether he actually believes those COVID vaccine conspiracy comments, whether he believes those or not, yeah, he very much might believe those things, but he's certainly amplifying that to an 11, making sure that's the forefront of his campaign. And as you pointed out, well, you follow that roadmap, there's a good chance you'll be the Republican nominee for whatever office you're running for. And, well, that turned out to be the case for him.
Right. But the problem for him is that this is not going to help him get elected governor, because, right. I mean, any day that Scott Jensen is talking about his COVID-19 views, which are unorthodox and out of step with the average Minnesotans, or any day that we're talking about abortion, I mean, these are days that he's losing. And so it was just another one of those yesterday where instead of talking about Tim Walz and Tim Walz's record and inflation and crime and so forth, we were talking about Scott Jensen and COVID-19 and Nazis.
Yeah, certainly not somewhere he wants to go in terms of campaign messaging. Well, we are just about out of time for the interview today. We have been speaking with Patrick Kulikhan, editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Make sure you go to minnesotareformer.com to read more about controversial comments from Scott Jensen, as well as that excerpt from the book that talks about how to end bias and the science and practice of overcoming unconscious bias in policing. You can find those both over at minnesotareformer.com. Patrick, thanks so much for the time today.
Always a pleasure.
All right, let's take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil on AM 950.
The progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show, once again rolling through your Tuesday. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I posted the pictures of the Lost in the Desert Day. Okay, there's not as many photos on that day as I took on other days, because there was a lot of panic going on. If you're panicking about, I'm going to die out here, you generally are not, let me take a few selfies before this goes down. Did I tell you what I ran across when I was in the desert? Did I tell you then?
Not yet.
So what happened was, we were going to go to Bear Ears. We're in Escalante, Utah, and we're going to go to Bear Ears.
And but Barriers Park, because there's no straight road there, that's kind of just due east of where we were, but you have to go north, come back. It's like a four-hour drive. So we said, okay, what can we do around here? And, of course, you have Grand Staircase Escalante. It's a fairly large national monument. And what we're supposed to do is supposed to there's an arch up there, the Escalante Arch. And it's one of those stone bridges that just naturally have formed over erosion. And they're really cool. And so they just said, well, take the Escalante River. You could just hike the trail there, and it'll take you right there. Or there's a lot of people that just hike the Escalante River right up there. It's about 2 miles, and then you'll get to see the arch. I'm like, okay, let's go do this. That was the only saving grace, the fact that we knew we could just follow the Escalante River and get there. But what happened is, because this is a national monument, and as I've said, national parks are national monuments. National parks are well-designed, well-signage. You know, the trails are very clearly marked. Everything is, you know, it's great parking. You know, it's very accessible. The monuments are much more like a go yonder for a spell. And that's kind of the thing. So when we came to the river crossing, it just didn't look like a river crossing. It didn't look like that's where you went. And so I kind of was like, oh, we'll just find where it's supposed to. There's supposed to be, there should be an easy lift for me to get across this river, shouldn't there? Nope. And that was where it was. And so we kind of just followed the river up. I got there. I ran into three people out in the middle of the freaking desert. I ran into three people. One woman wearing a bikini and a camelback, the water thing, running. It's 100-some degrees, and she was in fantastic shape. I'm not, let's not deny anything. But that was a little weird. After being lost in the desert, the first thing I say is, well, there's an attractive woman in a bikini. My mind's starting to go. Then came the elderly couple who were, even though it was 100-some degrees, are dressed in pants, a jacket, a hat, and they've got their walking sticks. And at the end of the day, they could outwalk me any day from Sunday. And then, of course, the guy that was looking for a person to eat. Those were the three people I ran into while I was out there. I got back to the car as quickly as I could. We eventually did find the trail. But here's the funny thing. One of my kids made this point. He said, Look at all the footprints everywhere. We're clearly not the first people who've gotten lost on this trail. And he was right. There was footprints. That's what made finding the trail real difficult. There was footprints everywhere. Oh. 952-946-6205. Scott Jensen has decided to double down. Yeah. He has released, this is from Rafi Schwartz at the Jewish Dream on Twitter. And I'm just going to read his post. Scott Jensen just doubled down in equating COVID mask rules with Kristallnacht as a legitimate comparison, because this is how I think. And ooh, buddy, we know that the whole problem, that's the whole problem. He goes on. So he basically is saying, this is how I think. I do love the other woman that wrote the thing. It's like, it's interesting to think that this guy thinks having to wear a face mask while you go pick up cheese at the grocery store is the same thing as the Jews being put on trains and sent off to death camps. Yeah, you know. What his problem is this, is we said this with Schechter in the first hour. He needs to be able to go out into rural Minnesota and be able to scream Nazi, because that's what they want to hear. And so he even though he's going to go speak to the Jewish Republican Jewish Coalition tonight, even though he's going to go speak to them, he still is like, you know, these Nazi comparisons are spot on. That's what I think. I think they're correct. Just because he'd rather upset the Jewish community in Minneapolis, St. Paul, than have to go back out there and say, guys, it's wrong to say Nazi, because those people don't know how to. That's all they want to say. They want to compare their mild inconveniences with the worst of the Nazi regime, while at the same time being part of a political party which seems to have an insane amount of anti-Semitic people in it. Yes. There's a new trend, and I caught this one earlier today. And this is a freaking hoot. So someone clearly is trying to advise the Republican candidates for statewide office in Minnesota on social media. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to do the Rovian technique, which is to basically accuse your opponent of, well, it's kind of a bastardized version of the Rovian technique, where you accuse your opponent of what you're guilty of and put them on the defensive. So you basically take your weakness and turn it into a strength. That's the kind of the mentality. Earlier today, Jensen comes out and is like, this election's not about abortion. Oh, it's not. So you're saying that if you became governor, that you would not at any point address abortion in the state of Minnesota. That's what you're saying. Here's what you're saying. Because I don't think that's true. I think that you're lying there. This election is about abortion. And it's about contraception, and it's about who you can marry, and it's about whether or not Republicans can come into your own private residence and dictate what kind of sex you can have and with what partner you can have that with. That's what this election is about. And Democrats, shame on you for getting away from that message, because that is the message that is switching, basically turn out 17 points in the favor of the DFL. So come on. Now, that's not the only outrageous tweet today. And this could be one of the all-time outrageous claims I've ever heard a Republican make. Jim Schultz, the guy that's running for attorney general, the guy that was part of that group that was so anti-abortion that they put forward the mentality that there has never been a legitimate medical reason for a woman to have to get an abortion. Yeah, those closed-minded twits. Yes, that Jim Schultz. Jim Schultz, who's running for attorney general, put out this tweet today. Justice must be blind. Too often the AG's office is on the side of big business and big government. I will stand up for all Minnesotans. You're going to stand up to businesses? Wait. A Republican says he's going to take the side of the people over a large corporation. Does anyone who just heard me read that think any Republican will ever take the side of the people, the middle and the lower class, over the side of a big corporation? Does anyone? The outrageousness of that claim, that he will go after big business as a Republican AG, holy God, as I responded, ha, 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 I think you're lying, George Bailey. He'll stand up to big business. Come on, man. Seriously, come on. You cannot believe we're that stupid to believe that you are really a born-again, salt of the earth guy. Come on, please. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Speaking of the abortion and the race for the attorney general, crisis pregnancy centers are the subject of a new consumer alert issued by Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison. The controversial facilities, Borat, the second Borat film actually has a really interesting take on them. If you go see them, the controversial facilities have been criticized by women health groups and other pro-choice organizations, which allege they tried to manipulate pregnant individuals out of seeking care from certified reproductive health and abortion providers. Ellison office says CPCs outnumber abortion clinics in Minnesota by an 11-to-1 ratio, though a study by the Minnesota Racket suggested the ratio could even be as high as 13-to-1. Many crisis pregnancy centers claim to offer comprehensive health care, but their purpose is to prevent pregnant women from accessing their right to comprehensive health care, which sometimes they accomplish by misleading, misinforming, or deceiving people, Ellison stated. All Minnesotans, including pregnant people, deserve to have accurate, medically sound information about their options from providers they can trust. CPCs are unregulated in Minnesota, but some receive state funding through promote practices that can involve reversing a medication abortion partway through. The vast majority of CPCs have no licensed medical providers on staff and provide few, if any, medical services, according to the study by the Alliance. CPCs use deceptive and misleading practices to exploit economic insecurity and gaps in the access to healthcare to advance their anti-abortion, anti-contraception agenda, writes the Alliance. Ellison encouraged Minnesotans to do their homework and seek care from licensed healthcare professionals. The state, Planned Parenthood. There you go. The state constitution guarantees the right to a safe and legal abortion in Minnesota, but the issue has moved to the forefront of the upcoming election following the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Ellison is on the ballot in November. His opponent is Republican newcomer and abortion opponent Jim Schultz. He told NPR he supports further restrictions on abortion in Minnesota, but said he wouldn't use the Attorney General's office to seek legislative changes on the issue. Oh, of course he wouldn't. He's just part of an organization who, once again, believes there has never been a medical need for a woman to ever get an abortion. However, this could change with GOP nominee Scott Jensen to win the governor's house over the Democrat Tim Walz. Republicans win both houses, the House and the Senate. You need to get out there and fight. You need to get out there and fight. It is, yes, this election is about women's right to choose the health care for their own bodies. Absolutely, 100%. Undeniable. And granted, Minnesota is a safe state. But the Republicans, the reason why all of them are, hey, guys, yeah, for the last 30 years, we screamed about making abortion illegal, but that was for the last 30 years. In the last 2 months, we've hardly said a thing about it. What makes you think this election's about abortion? Why would you think we would try to get rid of any abortion laws in the state of Minnesota? That's the Republicans. That's the Republicans. So this election, once again, is about women's right to choose their own health care. This is about whether or not the victim of a rape can actually have access to health care to end the pregnancy that came about because of the rape, not have a bunch of white dudes come tell her what a privilege it is for you to do have this baby. This election is about 10-year-olds who get raped, whether that's by a family member or someone non-family member, being able to have the common decency to not have their entire life overturned because a bunch of white guys sit there going, you've been blessed by Jeebus. It's this election is about not having white Republican guys come tell your kids, you know, even though the baby your mama's carrying is going to kill her, this is what Jesus really wants. It's a blessing, not a curse. Sure, she could get an abortion, but we don't want that. So mom has to die for our religious beliefs. And then comes contraception. And then comes who you can marry. Same-sex marriage, interracial marriage, they'll regulate it. Then comes, once again, the return of the sodomy laws, where they dictate what kind of sex you can have with who you can have in your own house, in your own private residence. Yes, this election is about abortion. And whether or not Scott Jensen can stop basically trying to use the Nazis to justify all of his arguments. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Take a break, come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Patrick, you actually just made a very good point about the observation about Republicans.
If you look at safe red states, Indiana being a very recent example, who just concluded a special session to restrict abortion, they have not moderated at all. Scott Jensen is moderating his abortion stance because that's what he has to do to win.
They have to lie to win.
Yep, they don't care about morals. They have no principles. They're just saying what they have to say to try to win.
They're lying to win. So I'll give you another great example, and there's a lot of media out there. This is out of a St. Cloud media outlet. This might be the article John Tevlin was talking about. He was reading, saying Minneapolis is empty, it's a ghost town, as he was sitting in a full capacity restaurant. Violence is keeping away from restaurants. Nowhere is more true than the Twin Cities. The reservation table service OpenTable uses 2019 as a baseline for the state of the industry. In July, bookings data out of Minneapolis were down 54% compared to 3 years ago. Okay, you do realize there was also a massive pandemic and about 30% of the population, I just read this story, about 30% of the population still is not eating out or going out. You do understand that. That would be a large part of that decrease in people going out. But heaven forbid, you know, you just want this to be about crime. So you'll just kind of scoot past the fact that there still is 30% of the population that doesn't want to eat out because of the pandemic. The shocking trend is hardly letting up, even as high-profile crime crackdown is underway. The number of people eating out of the Twin Cities fell by 50% from August 9th through the 20th. Where the hell did you get that number? And by the way, you just included August 20th? Dude, that was the day we just had the Twins play, the Vikings play. Orpheum had the Wicked. You got the Guthrie going out. You had concerts all throughout the downtown. A lot of people just going out for food. The downtown was packed that day. Dude, you live in St. Cloud. You don't know what the hell's going down here. You're just publishing propaganda to basically... If you don't know what the hell you're talking about, dude, then don't talk about it. There's no one at the state fair as it breaks the record attendance one day this week. Jeez. Congressman Tom Emmerer invited St. Paul chef Brian Ingram to testify in Capitol Hill last month. So this is one restaurant, one bar. We have a breakfast restaurant that used to open at 6, and now it's 7. Oh, my God. Sorry, I breathed in too fast. You are opening an hour later. An hour later. Chaos. He said, because it's dark. Dude, the sun is up at 5 in the heart of summer. And by the way, crime is not a problem at 6 freaking a.m. in the morning. This sounds, it's a crime. It's a hellscape at 6. 7, it's delightful. There's flowers. It's really nice. But 6, holy God, 6. Don't let your children go outside at 6. 7 o'clock, fine. I got those jump rope, do some hopscotch, they'll be fine. Basically, it's a ghost town when you drive through. It's a ghost town. Who has gone through Minneapolis right now and seen a ghost town? Dear God, the place is packed. Dude, you're in St. Cloud. Stay there. As a matter of fact, wait. Yes. Oh, it's horrible. You sure don't want to go down there. Boy, oh boy, you're probably a lot safer staying up in St. Cloud. Don't ever come down here and seen. See, that's how you do it. Dude, you don't like the city? Just don't come to the city. Stay the hell out. You're not welcome here. Minneapolis, St. Paul kicks ass, and it's pretty busy. You know, it's like I said, I love far-right media that puts out a story which doesn't even do basic fact research. It just pushes a narrative. Like, I don't know. I can't say that about St. Cloud. I can't. Devil's Radio's up next, then Native Roots at 6. We're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.